the Mizunos, they have this new face on there that I think is going to be pretty sweet, and the technology is cool. So I like that. I think this Callaway driver is going to be amazing.
Why?
I hit it a few weeks ago, and I think it's going to be potentially like the best driver that's ever come out.
If you put yourself in that situation, like let's say you are just playing a tournament that matters a lot to you and you're nervous and you stripe one down the middle and you're just in a divot. I always want to lean towards, I think you should be able to get relief.
Andrew's, like, Landry's smiling.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be able to. The Hoosiers could beat the Jets.
No.
They're the same age.
No, no, no. That's no.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
All right, we're back in studio with Andrew and Will, and I released an episode a couple weeks ago, but I took a hiatus because I lost all my money on Iron.
Same.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
So it took a couple weeks to financially recover. Mm-hmm. It was actually funny because, actually, Andrew, you were there at Winsong when, like, this whole combo happened, and, like, Phil Ebner's buddy told us about it, and Jack Reister was there too. And I didn't know that, like, Reister was also here, like, I knew he was paying attention, but like I didn't think he would go also like buy like me. You know, I'm kind of a degen, and I hear somebody smart talking. I'm like, yeah, like sound like good. And I did a bunch of research. I'm like, yeah, I actually there's something with legs to this. He texted me the other day and he goes, ah, I just caught up on your pods. Man, Iron is down bad. And I was like, yeah, well, the good news is I actually think there is a future with it. And we're coming back up.
Yeah.
We're fine. We're like we're almost back to 50 again, which is good.
Yeah.
And
for me, it's a lot of entertainment though. I mean, I text you all the time, just like randomly, like,
yeah, it goes up like 5% and I'll just get a text from Will, Iron. Iron. Yes.
Or it's down a bunch and I'm just like,
you're like, Iron. I'm like, oh no. Is it good or bad?
Yeah. You always have to respond and you go, what?
Yeah. Oh no. What?
Aren't you watching, dude?
Yeah. Cause we went through a bad couple days there.
So. It was a bad couple days. I actually was, it got down pretty low, but
you were, I was like, dude,
I got heavy on the
buy a little more and we'll reduce our, cost basis and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
I'll be fine. In 10 years. We'll laugh.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
And Andrew tore his ACL. Not fun news.
A little better than Iron going down, but
I think worse.
Yeah, probably.
All of the, what would it be? All the, like the Minnesota section players are rejoicing because Andrew tore his ACL. So
I'll be back. And we can ride carts in most of them, so.
You can, oh yeah, I guess you can.
The Pro-Ams.
Tiger did it.
Yeah, this is the redemption
Can we
arc.
Play in the Southview, the Pro-Am with you, like me, or can Will not play?
I think Will playing might be a little bit of a
I don't think
great
you can't play.
But you can play. The thing is that the team that I played with last year, I think we won by like maybe 8 or 10 shots. So
it might be hard. You guys are running it back.
It might be hard to kick them to the curb.
Well, Will, maybe we put a team together and then we'd hit Andrew and his bad knee.
Yeah. Yeah. A bunch of Iron hats up. And just play.
Yeah. Yeah. Be great. So what's going on? What's the update? You're not doing surgery. Tell the listeners what you just told Sydney and Si when we were trying to figure out coffee.
Basically, I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet, but I had spoke to someone about doing some prehab before surgery, and then he introduced me to this idea of being able to repair it non-surgically. And I guess repair is not the right word, but you can strengthen everything around it and regain a lot of functionality. So depending on the injury and what was injured along with the ACL, like there is a chance that you can strengthen the hamstring, strengthen the quads, and kind of get back to functioning pretty well. So he showed me some stuff that he's done with people that didn't have their knees repaired and they were back playing basketball and playing college football and doing things at a pretty high level. So fortunately for golf, you don't really need an ACL, but there's other things that I do enjoy doing that I might want an ACL. And so if I can kind of get away with not doing it, then maybe I will. But it seems to be that if you explore non-surgical, getting stronger, and you kind of wait to have surgery, it doesn't really have a negative impact, and the strengthening pre-surgery only helps you with recovery post-surgery.
Can I ask a dumb question that people hearing this might also have, because maybe they're dumb too? How do you not, you say you don't need an ACL, like imagine it's better if you have one than not, but like I hear like knee, right? And I always think about, and lately I've been focusing on my left or my lead side knee, because I like try and get there and then I twist more on that left side. Like, how am I overthinking that? Like the knee doesn't have as much to do with it, or?
Well, okay, for me as a right-handed player, and it's my right knee.
Oh, it's your right knee.
It plays a different role. So yeah, the left knee, I'll say this, if I had this injury in my left knee, I probably wouldn't be able to hit golf balls. But like I tore my ACL on December 13th. We went to Florida for Christmas and I played golf 5 times. And was
Your trail knee, like, not as much, right?
Yeah,
you're not
because
putting
it
pressures.
Loads into it very linear, right? It's not rotating. And then I did feel a bit of discomfort, like shifting, but it wasn't even pain. It was that, like, the neuromuscular, like the way it works, my brain's like firing and my quad and my hamstring and all the muscles down there are kind of protecting this injured thing. So they're not firing at the same speed or the rate that they're supposed to. That's what was like kind of felt a bit funky. Even now, like there's certain movements that feel really normal to me. Like walking feels good, but then if I have to go walk off of a curb, I like think about it and it feels like it's delayed almost. So I guess one of the big things with going non-surgical is like retraining your brain to fire certain muscles and get it to work and control. Because if you can have the big muscles controlling the tib and fib, you can kind of get away with it. Yeah. I guess that's the theory. So we'll see.
Well, this will be a fun recovery.
Yeah. This will be a fun update with Iron every week. Andrew's not
Iron and Andrew's ACL. Okay, good. Well, speedy recovery, obviously, to our best friend, Andrew. So we want to talk a little bit on this episode. Like, obviously, winter's really just slow in golf. Like, we're starting to get to that point of the year where, like, you know, the new TaylorMade driver just came out, and, like, it's literally all over all of my feeds all the time. One, because it does look sick, but two, people are just, like, ready for new stuff, right? Like, getting to that point. So I want to talk about a few things. We talk a little technology, but also the new rules for the PGA Tour season came out. So here's the 6 rule changes. And I want to hear from you guys, like, which one of the, you know, people hear rule changes and I imagine some of them will actually matter and some of them may just kind of be, you know, not that big of a deal. So number one was reduced penalty, which is a 1 stroke instead of 2 for unknowingly moving your ball, which probably doesn't happen that often. Free relief from another player's pitch mark.
That's good.
Yeah. Internal out of bounds applies only to tee shots. Expanded relief from obstructions near greens, not just sprinkler heads. Easier mid-round club replacement using components from your bag. I don't know, maybe that came up because of the Fitzpatrick thing, but he had a cracked face. And then the last was preferred lies relief area reduced from club length to scorecard length. So from a club length to a scorecard length. So of those 6, which of those stand out to you is like, yeah, that makes sense. Those are great. Those are like, we need to actually do that. Which of those are nothing burgers? And which of those do you think can go, oh, wow, I mean, is a professional golfer like trying to do this for a living? Like, this is actually going to impact maybe some of my scores.
Well, I think the most important one, well, there's 2. The relief from another player's pitch mark.
Yeah, that's
like plugged ball in the fairway. Like you drive one down the center and then it's landed. It didn't plug, but it's in someone else's pitch mark, and then you get up.
Because did you used to be able to get it out of your own?
No, you can always get it out of your own, but like sometimes it's kind of soft, but not plugging conditions, but where you leave these craters. And then on the PGA Tour, like a lot of the guys hit it, they're landing at the same spot. So if you bounce one and it lands in the fairway, and then it rolls into someone's pitch mark, and then you're effectively plugged, but you don't get relief. That kind of stinks. I'm sort of pro that. It's just one of those ones where it's a bit tricky. Like, it needs to be on TV, and then are we going to have like reviews?
It specifically addresses Shane Lowry at the 2025 PGA Championship. It sounds like it happened again in a big spot for Paul Casey at 2002 Players. But I would imagine when you see something from 2025, you go, okay, something clearly happened that they go, okay, we need to change this rule.
No, I think that one's bad.
Like, to your point, it's like, okay, you have to really see that though. Like if I'm hitting a drive and it's like kind of over a hill and I get up there and my ball's like in a pitch mark.
Actually, I guess no, it changes it where you don't have to see anything because your ball either plugged in your own
or
it's in someone else's. So it's that was dumb.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make a difference. It's very clear. My ball is in a pitch mark. Yeah. I can place it. I like that. That makes
sense. And I think naturally people are going to guess people are going to ask what, like, how do you identify a pitch mark versus like a divot?
That's pretty obvious.
I hope that that's...
I mean, you would think so. I'm just saying.
Maybe at the club, but on the tour, I don't think anyone's going to be... I mean, you could try to...
argue that this is a divot.
I'm just saying, like, we might see it this year at one point. Somebody might try to argue, like, they're in a big spot and something happens. You go, this is a pitch mark.
You know, it's just a beaver pelt.
And then I think the preferred lies reduce from a club length to a scorecard length. It... feels really lame to like think about whipping out your scorecard, but anyone that's played tournament golf and has played lift clean in place at any point in time has been greenside. And there's probably two scenarios that I can think of that make a big difference. And one is if you're kind of maybe on a spine or there's some kind of slope, you can use a club length and you can really change the angle and make a shot that would be maybe a 6 or 7 out of 10 in difficulty, like very straightforward. Or even to the point where I need to chip this and now I can putt it, something like that, right? That's, I would think, number one. And then two, if you're playing anywhere in the South, even here, sometimes there's like a little bit of grainy bent and it's different. You can move far enough to have a great lie versus I'm into the grain, the shot's kind of challenging, where I can move my ball left or right or back and get far enough away to like actually change kind of the surface that I'm on within the fairway. And that makes a huge difference.
And to your point, like I know when I've been playing and we've done pick clean place anywhere and you had a club length, it's like short game. It's kind of funny, but like short game is the point. It's like, I can remember like certain shots where I'm like, okay, I got to go like a little higher with this to cover like all the fringe and the rough, you know? And then it's like, if I go a club length to the left, I'm like essentially just playing like a straightforward, like, bump and run pitch where I could even like putt it. So you go from a shot where you're like, I don't know, I'm 15 yards away and I got to fly it like 12 and get a little spin on it versus like I go a club length left and now I'm just like, I just have to get this on the green and roll it up there. And that's big, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's a big difference.
And preferred lies are different than like, I think a lot of people, their mind goes to, you know, I'm around the green, it's like sprinkler head and I can get like a club length relief. And now as long as I don't go closer to the hole, I can actually put this on the green. We're not talking about that, right? We're talking about lift clean in place. Is that really the only...
That would be it. Because in the fairway, it'd be pretty... There's a few situations where like a club length still there makes a difference. I mean, I guess in theory, let's just say you're on a hole and there's like an overhanging tree branch in the hole. Maybe it's like a dog leg and you're kind of on the inside of the dog leg. That club length can make a big difference, especially, you know, if you're pulled driver out, like you get a couple feet and you can change the angle enough to where maybe it makes the shot plausible versus impossible or whatever. So I think from that standpoint, it does make... A club length makes it significantly easier than a scorecard length, and it's probably fair. So I don't like it because I like being able to use a club length and change. Yeah. I feel like that's almost,
especially
like,
with your broomstick.
100%.
Well, it's even like slopes in the fairway, like little things, like just like how you're standing. Like there's all these little things that go, it's like, oh, I'm on like a little, my feet are a little below, you know, it's like, whatever. I can move this club length and it like levels out a little bit more. It's like, that's more comfortable. Okay. It's like all these influential factors of that.
I've done so many things where like, I don't know, playing tournaments and it's almost, I don't know if I would call it, I pay attention to like what I'm doing and where I move my ball and how it's going to affect the shot. Even like think about a club length and you're like going for a par 5 and 2. It's like, oh, I can get over here and there's like a divot and I can kind of place it on the edge of the divot. And now I could basically hit like driver off the deck.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas if it's a scorecard length, it's like, I really am just in this spot. I might not have mud on my ball, but
I have the same shot.
Like I have the exact same shot. Whereas you can really like change the shot that you're about to hit with a club length.
And I don't think I've ever asked you two, like one of the biggest debates in golf is like, should you be able to move balls out of divots? Where do you guys stand on that? Like when it's a very clear and obvious divot, because in my opinion, like I'll just do whatever the rule says, but like I see like nowadays, a lot of the pros, they drive and they hit shots like all in the same areas, right? Like mm-hmm. they're about to play out at, what is one in Palm Springs?
La Quinta, whatever.
The yeah. Amex. And that course, like I played it last year. There's a lot of driving areas because it's very hilly. Like you hit hills and they all roll down to these same areas and you can just get absolutely boned. And like a lot of courses are set up that way. Do you guys like?
Well, it's even like when you watch like the final hole of the US Open and you're kind of like, all right, if this guy hits the fairway, like he's probably going to win. And you see it from like the top camera angle when it's rolling in the fairway. You're like, all right, he hit the fairway, but you're waiting. You're just like, all right, just like avoid a divot, avoid a divot.
Yeah, and it's like it kind of penalizes a, you know, quote unquote, good shot, like in the fairway. I feel like, you know, and I get that stuff can happen. And it's always been that way. I just am curious, two guys that have played at a high level, what your opinion is, because everybody has very different ones.
I go back and forth a lot. I go back and forth a lot because I think about it. If you put yourself in that situation, like let's say you are just playing a tournament that matters a lot to you and you're nervous and you strike one down the middle and you're just in a divot. Like I'd be, I don't know. I just did all that hard work.
Yeah, penalize is a good shot.
Penalize. Like, I'd rather
maybe. And other people just argue it's just bad luck.
Yeah. And it's like, I get the history of the game. Like that's what it's been. But I go back and forth. I always want to lean towards, I think you should be able to get relief. But that's like, I feel like I'm biased too. I put myself in a situation where if that happened to me, like, yeah, I want to move it. But
Andrew's smiling.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be able to.
Yeah.
So like, why?
That's fine. It's one of the best debates in golf. Like I am just curious. I just
think that like there's enough good breaks and bad breaks. And like anytime when you're playing well and everything is going your way, like so many things have happened over the course of that day or that tournament
or months
that have been very good breaks that you don't think about and you just accept as like, oh, this is not, I'm playing good and I deserve for this to happen, so to speak. And so like, I don't know. I don't hit it into that many divots.
Yeah, I don't either.
Oh my God, this is such a problem all the time. I'm getting screwed. Now I've had days where I've been in two or three divots. Literally, I missed the cut at the Valspar because I was in a divot. That was like the worst one. It was deep and it stopped in the grass, flipped over, and it didn't actually end at the divot. So it was like sitting like this, and then my ball is in like the elbow of the divot at the front, and I couldn't get it out of the divot. Mm. I had to like pitch it and then made bogey. And that hole number, I don't know, five, it's like an off camber dog leg right. It's a really difficult tee shot to hit it in the fairway. And I hit it in the fairway, and then I had nothing. Like, I wish I was in the trees. I don't know. Like,
that's the part right there. Like, that's what I always wrestle with.
Kind of stinks.
Yeah, like, if I
don't know, you could have made the cut and made a good, you know, that could have changed the trajectory of your career because of that. But, like,
that's what happens to other people too. I fight is like, when I'm just playing, it's like, I don't care. But in a situation like that where you're like, oh, I'd rather be in the trees, it's like, I get it. Like, you're right. You're pitching out, at least from the trees, you're like, I could maybe like carve this or do something.
It's like, that's like you deserved maybe a bad break.
But that's where it's like, okay, if you prefer to like wipe one in the trees because I'm in a divot, it's like, and that's going to control the fate of your weekend. That's just like what I struggle with.
Yeah. I think that the majority of the time you hit one in the fairway, let's just say if we put 100 balls that went in the fairway, how many on the first hole of wherever you play, or the last hole of your home course, if you have 100 balls that go in the fairway, like how many end up in divots? It's like probably not that many.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so then I just figure.
But the one that does, you miss the cut of the Valspar.
And sure. Like that is what it is. I don't know.
I'm not trying to twist the knife. I'm just, I'm just saying, man, like,
remember?
Yeah.
I pulled that out pretty quick.
Yeah. So. That I feel like that's where I'm at with it though. Like I can't come to a final conclusion
because
I keep going back and forth where I'm like in this situation. Yeah. I'd be pissed. Like I don't want it. But then also it's like, I know I've hit also like some really awesome shots out of divots and made like birdie and you're like, oh, if I,
well, hopefully the good news is that this year it sounds like all the new technology and drivers is having people like Scottie Scheffler and Ben Griffin hit it like 7 and 8 yards further with the new TaylorMade. So maybe they'll at least take the old divots out of play for a little bit.
The new TaylorMade driver is the same as the other one.
Okay. Yeah. So what's going on? Like, let's talk about this. Cause every single year, new drivers come out, new tech comes out. And, I've seen a lot of stuff about the TaylorMade. I've seen a lot of stuff about like the Callaway and what they're doing. And I've also seen a lot of, you know, I follow a ton of club junkie people. And like I've talked with you about this is the matching and pairing of like balls to driver faces is apparently a thing. Mm-hmm. Like Ping doesn't have their own ball, but I was talking to Jamie Dunlap, member at Windsong and been with Ping forever. He was like, dude, there's something about like the Pro V1 with like the Ping face. Like there's something like different about it. Like it works a little better. I heard you talk about that with the Callaway. Johnny Wonder was talking about that with like the TaylorMade stuff. So is that maybe something that's changing or is like technology changing or what's going on? Cause I have seen everyone say they're gaining 7 and 8 yards and like immediately putting this thing in the bag.
I mean, there's certainly something with like the package, and how those things work together. But a lot of it also is how you market it. So you can market the package and say, we are faster than the competitor and this is, you know, our testing, but then across the board, it might not actually be faster. So,
Cause if you're gaining seven yards and every time a TaylorMade driver comes out and they say 7 yards, it's like, if I go back and look 3 years ago, was he hitting it 21 yards shorter? Than
and they're using a Pro V1 left dash.
So
on a robot.
I kind of actually, I'm going to draw like one of the things that I really enjoy, like my hobbies is cycling. And all of these cycling companies, they have that their package would be handlebar, frame, and then the wheel set. And they say every couple of years they come out and they say, this thing is X amount of watts faster. So it should require less effort to go 30 miles an hour. Right. So that's the same thing with golf. And then now you're looking at, okay, this driver with this golf ball in these conditions is faster than competitor with this and that. And it's like, it's this very specific test that makes it look marginally better. Mm-hmm. I do think this year there's going to be two things that perform significantly better than others. I'm really interested to see how this Mizuno is.
Yeah. Didn't they change the face?
Mizuno driver?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think the Mizuno's like, I don't know, people chirp it online because it looks kind of, it doesn't look that great in person. Yeah. Like the face looks kind of like Walmart, Timu, whatever.
Love that for Mizuno though.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Mizuno's never been a driver company.
Yeah.
But they've made really, really awesome drivers for the last couple of years. And they have this new face on there that I think is going to be pretty sweet. And the technology is cool. So I like that. And then I think this Callaway driver is going to be amazing.
Why?
I hit it a few weeks ago and I think it's going to be potentially like the best driver that's ever come out.
Is it because were you just striping it that day or was it like a matchup with the ball?
It was 2 days after I tore my ACL. So I definitely was not
unknowingly. You didn't know you did, right?
No, the spin consistency that I saw was pretty insane. Like I hit probably 15 drivers and it was a 350 RPM difference between the highest and lowest.
Wow. That's
so
really good.
That was like and like
it's like your highest was 25 and your lowest was 22. And
exactly.
Like there wasn't
it was just like the same thing over and over and over. Yeah, it was really impressive. So
did they do something to the face? Like did they do any big change to the face or is it pretty similar? And
just I'm not, I think I can talk about it.
You can.
It's they've layered it.
Got it.
It's a three layer face. So there's three different components that are on the face.
Yeah.
And they've been able to, you know, improve the spin consistency.
Yeah.
The ball speed is maybe marginally up, but their whole thing, again, this comes to like the package. They're saying our driver's gotten better, and then they added a new mantle on the golf ball, and that's now faster. And so then, okay, well, if you can legitimately give me ball speed, we've made an improvement. Everything else is more like a fitting kind of getting it in the ballpark or like optimizing for you. But it's been a little while since someone's made a club or a ball that was like legitimately faster. Usually you have, I mean, there's some variance in like head to head. You might have a head that's a little hotter than another one and that's just like kind of normal. But I think that there's some cool stuff happening. I mean, and the same thing with Mizuno, like their driver is legitimately faster than last year because of the face. So this stuff is cool. And I think that that's like a fun thing to look at going into the new year.
Do you think like some of this stuff that they're doing has anything to do with the rollback? Like, do you think they're trying to get ahead of,
mind. I was like, just going to ask this.
Let's layer the face. Let's, like, do this to the ball. Like, is this part of, like, all right, we're trying to get the head of the curve here of, like, how do we optimize a rollback ball?
Yeah. Or
in the past, maybe, like, the way they've gone about it is, like, I don't know, everything's just, like, pretty fast. We'll get, like, a little bit better. But yeah. They're trying to, like, I don't know, they're trying to make a big jump. Someone's
well, I think you switch it, right, because it went from forgiveness
right.
to yeah. then to speed. And so now you kind of have to decide. It'll be interesting because I do wonder if one of the companies that maybe hasn't had, like, you know, its place in the, let's call it, like, for balls, I guess, and clubs, but I would say mostly ball because that's going to be the big change. So if you have Titleist, Callaway, mm-hmm. Srixon, TaylorMade, I guess, like, Maxfly.
No, right? Those are the big four.
But, like, sure. Those four, is there going to be an opportunity for a Maxfly or someone else to make a ball that's compliant to the new rules that ends up, like, surpassing the other ones? Right. And they come in and, like, kind of get a piece of the market because mm-hmm. it's performed really well. That'll be interesting to see. I don't know if it'll happen.
Yeah, like Bridgestone, when Tiger went to Bridgestone, they kind of, like, took a little chunk of the market there for a little bit, and then I feel like not as many people play it anymore. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they had that, like, E5 ball for a while. Like, mm-hmm. it seemed like everyone played the Bridgestone ball for, like, a year or two, and then now everyone's back into Titleist or TaylorMade.
Yeah.
I don't know why or what.
How about the hype launch? They were like, there was so much hype on, like, the Bridgestone Protos, and then it just, like, they suck.
Yeah. Just paid Tiger for it, I guess. I have no idea. I think he still uses one.
No, even recent. Oh, I think he does. But, like, they had the, in the last 3 or 4 months, they were like, oh, we have this new Proto balls coming out, like, different colors, and they're, like, getting Jason Day to do stuff, and then it just, like,
flop. You were talking about the hot Odyssey putters this year, and it'll be interesting now that kind of, like, the low torque, no torque, it feels like pretty much every major manufacturer has a option to compete with lap golf now. And so, like, I'm very interested to see kind of over the next year or two what I wouldn't say changes in putting, but, like, what the trends start to be are, because it feels like at this point everybody has either tried a lab or a no torque, and mm-hmm. people are starting to, like, settle into, you know, what they mm-hmm. look and feel, like, what they like, right? You said there was, like, a new putter with Tej or something that he designed. Like, what's going on in the putter world in this winter?
I saw his
Tej, you know, talks.
He's talked about doing a thing with Odyssey, and so I saw some of the what he's doing. But it has nothing to do with torque. It's just more of a fun like, designed for him, and that he thinks makes sense. I like it. I think it looks sweet. I think, you know, Odyssey is, honestly, it's, like, so impressive what they've done for so long.
It's so good.
Like, they've consistently made really quality putters and different designs, and
it's kind of the design part that, to me, that's so fascinating, is, like, they've actually really, like, when you go try Odysseys, you can, like, go so across the board with different designs, right? Like, whoa, I'm, like, using this one and then that one and the shaft placement. And I feel like with some of the ones that I haven't dug into it at all, so you'll probably know more than me, but looking at it and where the shaft placement is on mm-hmm. some of those, like, zero torques versus the lab being so far back, and don't the new Odyssey.
The new Odyssey are closer is to the face. Really the one that, I mean, it's expensive. That all those zero torques are kind of expensive.
They're all expensive. I do now, think they're fucking $700-$800 for a putter. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah,
go back to the $300 putter. Like, that's what a putter costs,
right?
Yeah. No, I think the best looking zero torque on the market now, I guess, until the Odyssey. I think the Odyssey is pretty good, but I still like this one. Would be the Spider.
Yeah, it's so
I think
good.
That one is just really well made. Like, the colors, the way it looks, the way it feels, everything about it is great.
I got an all black one too. It's sick.
The new Odyssey, I think that they did a good job because the shaft is much closer to the face, and then the shapes are ones that everyone's familiar with. So like Rossi mallet, the number seven, the Jailbird, like, those are things that people have clearly really liked over the past 10 or 15 years. And so you're not introducing something new. It's something that I like the way this looks, and I have some added tech to it, or maybe I am a zero torque guy or low torque guy, and that's cool.
And, like, especially people with Odyssey, I know, like, I just grew up liking them in the feel of the face, you know? So it's like, oh, when Zero Torque first started, and you like, let's say you had to go to a lab, but it's like, I love the Odyssey like feel off the face. It's like, shit, I want that with like this. And it's like, they finally figured that out where I think people do love that soft feel of an Odyssey, like people that use them. And it's like, even for me, when I use a different putter, it's like, that's what I kind of come back to is like, I'm just so used to that feel off the face, better or worse, where now you actually have those options to.
And putter's just so feel based too, right? Like when you kind of find a feel and look that you like, it seems you can, people go try new stuff, but you almost always come back to kind of, you know, the thing that you like and how it performs and feels. Last but not least, my guy, and I'm wearing his hat today, Brooks Koepka. It sounds like he's ditching LIV, coming back to PGA. And it's kind of funny, like, I feel like nobody's really talked about LIV, really, other than, like, it's been great to see those guys, you know, like, in the Ryder Cup was awesome, like, seeing Rahm and Hatton, and obviously people really love Bryson, but, like, it feels like that whole thing has kind of settled a little bit. And like now with Brooks, I think he's just trying to get status back. I don't know if he like had to write a letter or what, but he's just, I think he's just trying to get his PGA Tour status back without having to go through everything. So that's topic one. But topic two, like, is LIV just going to die and fizzle out? Or, I mean, do you guys even follow it whatsoever?
No, I don't follow it at all. I mean, I have my very generic opinions of it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it feels like it has to die at some point, like, unless something changes.
Or it just becomes the tour that's, like, between the PGA and the champions.
Yeah, like, it's got to play a different role, right? Like, it was trying to compete with the PGA, but, like, that's clearly
not working. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the future looks like. I also am not positive that the PGA Tour is as healthy as everyone thinks it is. I think that Tour is heading in a direction that is ultimately could be problematic for them. I don't like the idea of, like, limited fields, and like, I don't know where they're going to keep getting money. Just like, we're going to keep increasing purses and paying guys more, because they're doing that all to compete with LIV, right? So that made an impact on what the tour had to provide for the players. The best part to me growing up watching the PGA Tour and wanting to play on the PGA Tour was, one, it felt like it was attainable in the sense of getting there. Mm-hmm. But two, it's such a cool sport where you can turn on, I don't know, an event early in the year. Let's say it's, I mean, Kapalua was fun because you'd start and you'd watch. And then the Sony Open, you were excited to see that because that's when some of the good players that played the Tournament of Champions at Kapalua would go to Sony. And then you'd also see the guys that like maybe were rookies or, you know, didn't win. And then coming down the stretch, you're going to have a guy, it's like a David and Goliath every weekend. Like, that was fun. And that's what made the tour great. So then when you go from 156-man field where you might have someone you've never heard of come down the stretch against Tiger Woods, that's great entertainment. Now, if every time I turn it on, I see Rory, Scotty, I don't know, Ludwig, like, that gets tiring.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like predetermined. Like, you know, like, okay, top player against the top player is going to be coming down, which, like, on paper, they're like, cool, I want to watch that. It's like, yeah, but you're kind of missing the fact that, like, Bob May versus Tiger Woods was also, like,
Why Yang versus Tiger?
Yeah.
Yeah. My main argument is that, like, most of the good tournaments now that most people, like, I'm just talking general population watch, like, aren't PGA Tour tournaments.
No, it's just majors. So, like, even here, like, the 3M, it's positioned in a place on the schedule where they're set up to fail.
Yeah. It's right after the British.
Yeah.
How do you go to how does the PGA Tour go to 3M and say, we need to up this and we want more money? It's going to cost more. The field is probably going to be worse. Mm-hmm. And, like, how is that sustainable? So, like, because you could go, like, the 3M would be better than, like, the Barbasol, but that's a terrible golf tournament.
Yeah.
And then the 3M is like essentially going to turn into that. And if they, I don't know, like adjusting the schedule, it just seems.
Do you think the solution is less tournaments?
No.
I think they should be playing every single week?
Not necessarily. I think optimized some. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say that I like how it was before, just to say I like how it was before. But I do think that you got to see all the guys play, before, and there were certain events that were a little bit better than others, but it was just because of the field. It was never so much like purse based. I mean, some of them right. did have better purses, but it's fun to see guys compete against each other that aren't just like the top 20 in the world. And then when they were together, it's exciting. I do know, like if you think about the WGC events, which we no longer have, the WGC events were essentially elevated events.
Yes.
Back in the day. No cut, guaranteed like $30,000 for last place. Top 75 in the world, I think it was.
Yeah.
Except for the only one that was really fun to watch was the match play.
Match play,
And it was great because
they need to bring match play
back. Like the only reason why I liked watching other ones was because of the golf course. Like, wasn't there always one, WGC, wasn't there one at Firestone?
There was one at Firestone.
So it's like, I remember that tournament being like, oh, well, it's Firestone, and like maybe Tiger also played well there.
They need to do a 2 week long match play tournament.
But that match play was so good. Now, granted, I know it's a total risk for the ratings because the new one sucked with the bracket play or the pool play.
Yeah.
The straight 64 bracket, like you lose, you're gone.
Yeah.
Sick.
I want the playoffs like that. I wish they could somehow do the FedEx where it's like.
They got to figure that out.
But that was the only WGC that you'd watch.
Well, I mean, just think about how electric the Ryder Cup is. Like, you know, and match play just brings that out. Like, you can make a 8 on a hole and it's just like, all right, on to the next. Like, you can come back. Like, watching, you know, Justin Thomas and Bryson, like, come back in their matches and make these, like, big putts and, like, every hole matters. Like, that's a different viewership type where, like, I mean, Scotty's the best in the world, obviously, at stroke play, and he just over 4 rounds will just grind you out. But it's a whole different ball game in match play.
Yeah, and, like, the competitiveness or, like, the energy in match play. Like,
it's so good.
They're just so much more up for every shot. Where, like, of course, in stroke play 4 days.
Because it's
like
a new thing every hole.
And you're patient. You're like kind of waiting for things and going through your normal process. So it's like, but match play, it's like every single shot. Like the difference between the shot on 18, you know, when they like have to make birdie versus like hole 3 is like not that different. Like it is, but it's like, it's still so intense early on in the match.
Yeah.
Where like Thursday, the first 9 holes, you're like, oh, this guy's 5 under, but it's like that probably doesn't even matter. He'll like not even be relevant in the next 3 days. Yeah. You know, like the US Open is notorious for that. It's like, go look on Thursday and the more like, oh my gosh, this guy's like leading the US Open. I've never even heard of him. And it's like,
miscut
people. Yeah. Right. It's like people like, it's funny because in any other sport, if a guy like that was leading or whatever, it'd be a story where now I feel like it's so like predetermined where it's like, cool, he's leading, like he's gone.
Yeah. Like, I want to see Victor Dubuisson hitting it out of bushes at Dove Mount on the WGC again.
Yeah, moving like, wasn't he like moving like all the wires and stuff like around?
Dude, they just need to go hire a bunch of, you know, the guys that do the YouTube golf, like to go get the content from those places. People would for sure watch it.
Yeah.
100%.
I agree though. I mean, the PGA Tour is like, I don't love the smaller. I think it just gets rid of a lot of stories that I know personally I want to hear. Like, especially now later on, like I know when I was younger, I had idolized, right? Like the best players in the world, where now that I'm, I don't know, just older and a little bit different, where now I'm like gone the other way where it's like, I'm actually less interested in like Scotty and stuff. I'm
come up.
Yeah. I want to see.
The like stories. It was cool watching Scotty come up.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Well, and Justin Thomas and, you know, Jordan Spieth.
Right? I even think of you said about the Sony and like the rookies or like who's coming is like, I remember when Russell Henley shot like 29 on the back nine. Like I remember sitting at home and he won at the Sony. And now looking back at it, it's like, I actually didn't even know who Russell Henley was because I was like 17. So I wasn't like paying attention to people growing up playing or whatever. Yeah, right. Yeah. But I was like, oh, this guy can like ball. And like the way he putted, I was like, cool. Like is new. It was just like, and now you look at him and he's like playing in Ryder Cups. He's doing that.
Yeah.
And it's like,
I think too, the one thing, I guess the second part of what I was mentioning with like the direction of the tour is when I say it felt attainable, you look at it and you say, okay, I'm going to play junior golf and college golf, and then I'm going to turn pro and I'm going to go to Q school. And they've made it harder to graduate from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour. But now with the elevated events, it's really, really difficult for you, if you're a rookie on tour, you're not getting into those events. It's really hard to keep your card. Super like you're set up to fail. Whereas you weren't set up to fail 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. You had a chance at doing something. And so that part I hate. Now, I understand if we're sitting here and we're on the board for the PGA Tour and we're all playing all the elevated events, we're going to protect our job. Mm-hmm. 100%. Screw the new guys. I don't want any more competition. Right? But I also wasn't a generational talent and I'm not a top 20 player in the world. And so then when you look at it and you go, man, I really would love to do this. And
like, what's my route?
Like, how am I going to get there? Yeah. Like, it feels impossible.
I will say though, like, it's to your point, it is a lot more possible than a lot of the other professional sports. Like, you know, I don't want to say anybody, but like technically anybody can like put the work in and like turn pro and then go sign up for Q school, get hot and like get through that. Right. Like, you can't just like decide to turn pro and go try to like make the NBA. You know what I mean? Like,
no, but like once it's not the same. If you go, I mean, I'll say this though: once you make it to Division One, like high level Division One, whatever sport mm-hmm. it is, and the other ones, you have a chance to get drafted. Whereas in golf, it's like, okay, now I have to just
there's
do my own thing. There is draft. No draft.
Yeah. But what I always say is like, even if you're a good D1 college basketball player, right? Like, you have a certain body type, certain role that can fit a team. It's like you actually need one guy, like one coach or one guy even in the organization that's like, okay, I want that guy because I think we could do this.
Yeah.
So it's like some guy might have better stats actually or whatever, but it's like, oh, this guy's 7 feet. He can shoot a little bit. We need that. Let's just like grab this guy in the like fifth round and see what we can do. And it's like, you're mm-hmm. getting paid and you're doing that, right? Where it's like some guy could have better stats, but doesn't really fit the role or what teams need. So it's like in golf, it's like on you, which is like fun. But like in other sports, it's other people are kind of giving you an opportunity in a way.
There's training and development.
Yeah, there's the right situation. Negatives.
Yeah.
There's like the positive in that you can be Zach Johnson and just grind it out and keep going. And then next thing you know, you're probably a Hall of Famer. And then that's pretty cool that you can make that decision and just do that. That's not really the case for every other sport.
Yeah.
I always wonder what would be the most, or what's the easiest sport to make a living in?
To make a living in?
Yeah.
I mean, if you define living by making like a solid paycheck and like being able to do it, I would think that it's baseball just because of how much they pay people and then how many teams and levels there are. I could be wrong, just like, but that's my initial assumption. But
like
because
minor league baseball, I wouldn't consider what you're doing making like a good living. You couldn't have kids and you could.
Yeah, I mean, you travel a lot, but like, I'm just saying like in baseball with no salary cap and like they're having, you know, you have single A, double A, triple A. I think there's actually another, you know, kind of like the, you know, like what, I guess the Saints now are part of the Twins organization, but you know, like that type of league.
Yeah.
And then like the fact that they pay guys so much, I feel like that would be, cause there's the most players, the draft is the deepest and they pay the most. Like those are the three things.
But it's hard to get to where you get paid. Because like AAA baseball, I think they only make like 50 grand.
Yeah, but how much, but at least that's making a living. Like they don't, you don't have that opportunity. Like in football, there's only six rounds and 30, like there's only 180 guys that get drafted. There's a ton in baseball.
I think NBA is small.
NBA is super small.
I was thinking soccer.
Tennis would be so hard.
There's a lot of leagues across the world.
I think I'm right on this. I think it's baseball.
I think you're right too.
I think it's baseball.
I think baseball. I mean, I
golf, you have to pay.
Golf, you literally
golf is the opposite.
Golf, I'm like, so you're so broke by the time you start making a paycheck. Yeah. You're like, I have to do this 3 years.
And then the other one would be football. And that's not, I mean, there's like no other league. I guess now that they get paid in college, you could maybe argue that because like college kids are getting paid NIL money now.
The easiest is live. You can like in the beginning shoot 80 and get like, I mean,
dude, you see what some of these guys are getting paid, like NIL D1 players that probably won't even go pro. At least you have a chance to make some money like in college now.
Yeah,
so you could argue that, forever. But that again is a very small, you know, sample size.
Did you see that the average age of the Hoosiers was older than the average age of the starters for the Packers?
That's hilarious.
Is that real?
I don't know if it's real. That's I just not saw real. A tweet. It said it was 23.9 was the average age of the starters for the Hoosiers and 23.8 for the starters of the Packers.
There's no way that's right.
Is that totally fake news?
The Packers can't. No, the Packers can't be that young. There's no chance, dude. You get no. That's not right. No way.
Well, if you had like three guys that were like 35 on your team,
Indiana
already is gonna.
Hold on. Indiana Hoosiers average age
starters.
They're 23. Oh, here, there's an actual article on this. Am I about to eat crow? And it says, for perspective, the Green Bay Packers average age of the season is 25. So the Hoosiers is 23, the Packers are 25.
Which is still like kind
of close. Yeah. But I was like, dude, there's no way.
So
they should play each other.
Well, they should. No, I mean, like,
that's, you're not serious.
The Hoosiers could beat the Jets.
No.
They're the same age.
No, no, no. That's no. You need to take that thought and you need to
No, I think
that's not, a dumb thing. That's really dumb.
No, I don't think so. I think
when it
comes to like men versus kids. So like Oregon, you can have a bunch of 5 stars that are 19. A 23-year-old man can still like bully a 19-year-old.
There, in the history of the NFL and in college football, there is not one college football team that could ever beat an NFL team. Mm-mm. No chance. Snowball's chance in hell. No.
I agree because the age was never 24 average.
Oh, so you agree that I'm right?
No, I'm saying things are changing. Like with NIL and like 6-year seniors, super seniors, and your average age of your team is 24, you might have a 24-year-old on your roster.
Well, I need backup here. You can't.
You see what I'm saying?
No, I understand that
That's
point.
That's where I'm going with it. I'm saying it's different than it's ever been.
But
I don't,
sure. For the first 45 seconds of the NFL game, actually, during kickoff, the college team would realize, excuse my language, oh, fuck. This is like 10 times faster than anything I've done.
That's probably true.
That's when it just goes like,
dude, okay, no, like Justin Fields, I think, was the last like Jets quarterback. He literally won the Heisman in college and was running around everybody, and he goes to the Jets and wins 2 games.
Reggie Bush, too. It's like
Reggie, dude, there's no, we're not even, we got to end this episode. We got to save Andrew here.
I want to do an episode on this because this is fast.
No, there's
and
nothing to talk about.
I'm not even a football expert by any
There's means. Nothing to talk about. It's not.
True.
But I do see what you're saying. I understand your point. The age is that part. Like the age, people will get, this is exactly what happened in college hockey was like when they started letting like kids play college hockey that like had played juniors. Mm-hmm. And like now all these D1 teams have like 22 and 23-year-old kids on them going up against the Gophers who have one and done to 18. They were just bigger, faster, stronger and would beat those one and done kids.
Yeah.
That is 100% correct. But then to think that like one of those college teams could go beat like the Utah team that like just got mm-hmm. no chance.
Right.
No. And that's okay.
What is the youngest team in the NFL?
The Packers.
Are they?
Yeah. They have been like 3 straight seasons. It's crazy.
At like 25 average.
Yeah, right around there.
Okay.
They're
I wonder
the
what
youngest.
The oldest team in the NCAA is going to be in college at some point. Not this year, but I'm saying in
oldest
the future.
Well, like Indiana, yeah, I mean, 20, probably 23, 24, because you have to have eligibility. Crazy. Yeah, you have to have eligibility.
Did you see that whatever Trinidad Chambliss like asked for a 6th year already? Because like he's not going to make it in the NFL.
Right.
And he's like, I want a couple $1 million.
Yeah. At least he's aware.
Yeah, go get your bag. Back to the original question, like maybe football's the easiest to get. You can just go to college and get
just go to college for
grand.
7 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Things are changing. Things are new. I'm excited.
We didn't get onto Brooks, just so you know.
Well, we kind of did. We talked about PGA and Liv. I mean, Liv think is dying, and you know, there's all the issues with PGA, but it is very telling that Brooks is trying to come back to PGA and like he's over it. But he has always been that guy that like he wants to play in majors and play at the highest level and like compete with those guys. And he probably sees his window is closing a little bit and who knows, maybe he's just sold a false bill of goods with Liv and he's like, oh yeah, I get to go against Bryson and Rahm and DJ and all this stuff. But like you see what it is now. And I think the PGA is just kind of playing that waiting game and eventually they'll come back. And I hope is that they join forces somehow. And even if Liv keeps their naming rights, like they just got to figure it out and kind of combine a little bit. Hopefully that happens sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll see if it happens before the new ball gets rolled out.
I think it would be pretty dumb to not have Brooks back.
Yeah. For sure.
Like, it only helps them.
But to your point, it's like a slap in the face to all these guys. He's, like, taking somebody else's spot. Same with, like, Vijay Singh coming back to get his stat. Like, taking some kid's spot that, you know, could be the next up-and-comer.
Yeah.
But, you know, they both got that history and notoriety.
I'm a little more okay with that. I mean, Brooks is... You don't know what you have with him currently, but he's won, 5 majors?
Yeah.
He's incredibly good.
Yeah. Right.
And so he is someone that you want to watch play. And if he's taking the spot from some kid that finished 12th on the Korn Ferry money list and got his card, I think that's a trade that is okay.
PGA can figure it out.
if I was 12th in the money list and got my card and Brooks took my spot, I'd be like, okay, I'd be pissed, but I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just, if VJ took my spot, I'd be like, dude, this is,
I just thought of that.
He's wearing, like, he's wearing Hokas and like striping, trying to play a tee up.
And he's just striping it.
Yeah. VJ's a beast though.
I love him.
VJ's so sick. All right, guys. That was fun. Appreciate it. Till next time.